The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
An abducted child, a mother accused, and a sceptical detective all await readers in the next instalment of the Charlie Parker series. And the author of that series is John Connolly, is with me now. John, good morning and welcome.
It's very nice to be here. I'm having huge flashbacks because I think you were the first TV interview I ever did when I published my first book.
The first Charlie.
Doing the Late Late. And I remember, I don't think I've ever put more thought into what I was going to wear. And I didn't have anything. It was terrible. I remember going on and then looking at it later. And thinking, I'm never going to watch myself on television ever again. Would you ever watch things back when you were on?
No. They're gone.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're already thinking of next week. It's like after the program today, we have a post-mortem.
Okay.
And then it's on to tomorrow.
Yeah, because I occasionally get asked, do I ever go back and look at older books, you know? And I remember having to go back and look at Every Dead Thing because I was writing a prequel to it and I wanted the two books to mesh. And it was really weird because all I could see were my influences. You know,
oh, really?
You're just a sum of everybody that you've read up until that point. And I think it probably took me 15 years before I even began to find a voice that was anyway resembling my own.
But I mean, when you are writing a novel and you've got your final draft and it goes to your editor and then it's sent back to you and then you've got, I mean, the editing process must be torturous.
I think they don't pay me to write. They pay me to do all the stuff that comes from the point when the book is delivered. Writing's a pleasure, but no, that stuff of, and I never need to sit in another marketing meeting again. And I also remember thinking, because I gave an interview, I don't tend to read interviews either because I don't really want to hear what I had to say because I kind of know that. But I did an interview recently that was published at the weekend and a friend of mine said to me, you know, you didn't seem to want to be invited to any literary gatherings ever again because one of the other things I didn't want to do was to spend very much more time with writers. I remember having to spend an evening with a writer who could only talk with enthusiasm about the mechanics of artificially inseminating goats. And I remember thinking that this was turning into, it was quite a testy evening, I seem to remember, that the words, you don't want to hear the words artificial vagina before you've had your main course or even after you've had your main course. And at that point, I thought I'd probably had enough. It's that weird thing. There's a, I don't know whether you read the Irish Times, I hope you do, some nice newspaper. And on Saturdays, they often interview writers. And there's always this question that if you have any six writers at your dinner table, you know, living or dead, who would they be? It's always a part of me thinks I'd rather lose a toe. There's a kind of assumption that writers are going to be incredibly interesting people because of what they write. And in general, they're people who are better off not let out of the house. You know, you live in your head and you produce these characters, but intrinsically interesting.
Salman Rushdie might be interesting as long as he talked about his misadventures, being attacked, hiding from the Ayatollahs and all the rest of it, rather than about
the genesis of Midnight's Children at
exactly.
length. Yeah. It's sometimes that you can inadvertently turn into an interesting person. But I think as it is, it's such an insular life. You spend a lot of time sitting in a room making stuff up and then you get wheeled out to talk to people.
Now, how many books in the Charlie Parker series now?
I think this is 21.
21?
Yeah.
This is incredible. So back in 1999, who would have thought that your character would live on and
what
live
are you
on
saying,
so
Pat?
Well.
You're saying that you read it and thought, this is never going to last. this is like the Sinclair C5 of books.
Well, what I'm saying is that I am enjoying this one very much.
So
the question is, you know, trying to find a new plot, you know, what inspired
it's
the current
not, it's
we're
not really
about.
An issue. Funnily enough, I think if you're in any creative field for a long period of time, ideas aren't really the currency. You'll have a couple of ideas a week that would translate into a book. I remember seeing Woody Allen being interviewed back when it was still okay to interview Woody Allen. And he was asked about ideas. And I remember going into his bedroom and he opened a drawer in his desk. And there were little, you know, receipts and beer mats and napkins. And all of them was just a line for an idea for a film. And he said, well, when I want to write something or write a film, I go in, I open the drawer, I pluck something out. And there it is. You know, ideas aren't the currency. And I think people who are trying to write sometimes think that's the case. Time is the currency, you know.
I want to ask you about your love, quite clearly, of Americana. And if you don't mind, I'll read the first paragraph, maybe, of the current book.
Sure.
Or if you want to read it, I can pass it over to you. But it's probably handy for me.
You've got
just
your
to
glasses
do.
On.
Moxie Caston was easy to underestimate, but only on first impression. He was overweight by the equivalent of a small child. Didn't use one word in public when five others were loitering nearby with nothing better to do, and had a taste for ties with patterns reminiscent of the markings of poisonous insects or the nightmares of LSD survivors. He subsisted largely on fried food, coffee, and the main soda that had given him his nickname, now long since passed into common usage. Since he'd been christened Oleg, Moxie sounded far better to him. He lost cases, but not many, and his friends far outnumbered his enemies. Now that is such a hook. I want more, and I did get more, and I kept on reading. Tell us about the elements of the plot, which you give away on the back of the book anyway. It's about a missing child.
It is about a mother who is accused of possibly abducting and harming her child. I struggle a bit with legal thrillers. I'm not a fan of John Grisham, and I don't know why that is. We all have a blind spot in the books that we read. But I was very curious about the mechanics prior to a trial. And one of the things private investigators occasionally do, especially if they work for lawyers, is pre-trial prep. So they're going out and they're interviewing witnesses and they're trying to establish who's hostile, what position are these people going to take? Do they have anything useful to tell us? And that was what fascinated me, the idea of these conversations that people have where somebody says at one point in the book, I think every conversation is a negotiation. Everybody is trying to decide how much information to give away and how much they're going to get back. And I found that really interesting. So it's not a book in which there's a great deal of violence. It is a book in which every conversation reveals a little bit more about the plot. And gradually Parker comes to realize that actually all these people can't be telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, somebody is lying.
That process you talk about, I mean, on telly, you see it in The Lincoln Lawyer, for example, which is one of Michael Connelly's creations. And it's fascinating. I'm not sure, does the same kind of prep go on in legal cases here? That they have a private investigator who's charged with kind of sussing out the witnesses?
We don't really have that kind of private investigator culture here. I think it often falls down to legal assistance. And I think that's one of the things about that differentiates Irish literature from American literature and why, I guess, when I started writing, I couldn't really set the books here, in that I was fascinated by that culture of the private investigator, which I think comes out of the Western. You know, those early private eye writers like Dashiell Hammett had also written Westerns. And, you know, it was the lone gunman going into a town and sorting something out because he wasn't beholden to the criminals and he wasn't beholden to the law. And I think that's the difference as well between British and American crime fiction, in that British crime fiction, that kind of golden age fiction, believes that underlying everything is order, that the world tends towards order and that crime is an aberration. The Americans look at it and say, actually, the world tends towards disorder. And increasingly, a lot of us would look at the world and probably decide that's true. And the investigator can't really restore order. All he can do is give you some kind of partial solution. And I kind of, that chimed more with my worldview, I think, even back then.
Now, writing a book like this set in Portland, Maine, means you got to know Portland, Maine, and you do, or do you?
No, I do. I have a place there. I tend to approach writing a book the way I think filmmakers do scouting locations, and that I've just come back the week before last. I was in the US, and I drove from Washington DC to Memphis, Tennessee, which is quite a long distance. It's about 1,000 kilometers in a few days, because that was the path of the next book, and parts of it I wanted to trace. And by doing that, then the book changed because I realized some of the things that I wanted to do didn't quite work. So I'm quite meticulous about what I do. And I will often find people who are the ages of characters or who grew up in the area. And I'll sit down with them with a notebook and just ask them to tell me about their lives. And that's probably a hangover from journalism. Yeah. I think one of the things I learned from journalism when I worked for the Irish Times was that if you scratch a life deeply enough, everybody is interesting. Everybody is interesting. They have some story. They have something that's fascinating. That's a little detail you can take. And as a writer, I tend to steal a lot of things. I'm not ashamed about it. I will take people's lives and use them for the books.
Yeah, one of the things another writer that we've had on the show, Steve Kavanagh, said about, he writes, you know, in the American genre, from Belfast, and said, why? He said, because you don't have to explain America. You don't have to explain New York to people. They already have it in their mind's eye. So you don't have to waste time.
And I think that's very particularly true of Irish people, in that we have looked to America and Australia and Britain as a form of escape. For those of us, I mean, I grew up in Dublin in the 70s and 80s, and it was a grim place to grow up. And all I wanted to do was escape, but I had no skills. I had nothing that was a transferable skill set.
But and when you did a whole pile of jobs.
I did, but I wasn't very good at any of them, really. But I think that American literature and culture provided me with a form of imaginative escape. And I think it's one of the benefits of living in a small island. Some of us will look inwards, and there was a kind of Irish literature at the time that didn't do anything for me at all, that seemed to be very inward looking. And then I just wanted to escape. And that American literature, American culture provided a kind of imaginative escape for me. And I think that was true of a lot of people. It was some people wanted to stay a bit closer to Ireland, and those people went to maybe to work in London, knowing that you could come home a couple of times a year and see your parents. But, you know, people who went to Australia, maybe they were maybe going to come home every 5 years or every 10 years.
If at all.
Yeah, if at all. And people who went to America, exactly the same. Sometimes it was a way of putting Ireland behind you a little bit. And I very much wanted to do that imaginatively.
Yeah. I was listening to Peter Murta, you know, Peter from the Irish Times, and he did this great journey from South America all the way through to Alaska. But he was talking about the further north along the American coast he went, the nicer people became. You know, often we only see the ugly side of America being headlined, whether it's a school shooting or whether it's, you know, dour politics. Mm-hmm. And there's another America that's enjoyable.
I mean, traveling through the South, you know, this is Trump country and very Republican. And yet people are exceptionally helpful and kind and polite. It's you know, individually, people tend to be, generally speaking, tend to be perfectly lovely. You get them in a mob and they turn awful. And yeah, I think very few Irish people will not have gone to America and experienced a sense of welcome and curiosity, I think, as well, because so many Americans don't travel. You know, they don't own passports. And the country is so huge anyway that negotiating the differences between Alaska and Louisiana is more than enough for most Americans to take. They may as well be different countries. But they're genuinely interested in the outside world. They're genuinely interested in people who come over. And we take that for granted a little bit, I think, whereas they don't to the same degree.
The next book, you've already adverted to it. You're scouting out locations. Mm-hmm. So Charlie lives on.
He does for the moment. I think the series needs to come to an end. We have been long in discussions about television, which is kind of gradually coming to fruition, I hope, because I'd really like that yacht. And but the people doing the TV series were very clear that they wanted an ending. They didn't want this to go on indefinitely. They wanted 5 seasons and they wanted to have a closure. And I suppose if that goes ahead, that will determine when the series ends, because I don't want to have a George R.R. Martin situation where, you know, a TV series has effectively ended your books for you, but you hadn't finished the series. And I think that's put him in a very difficult place psychologically and creatively. And I wouldn't want to be in the same position. So I think if they go ahead, I will move at the same pace as they do.
So video killed the radio star. TV could kill Charlie Parker.
Well, could effectively end. Yeah, they could provide it. But I think the series has always been moving towards a kind of conclusion. And to be fair, most authors just die. You know, we drop off the perch and the books remain, and the writer or the character remains in a kind of limbo, unless you're so successful that, you know, you get your, like Lee Child did, get your brother to come in and do the heavy lifting for you. I suppose I'm quite interested to do what most writers don't do and to close off a series. I think the only one I can think of is Colin Dexter, and Colin just didn't want to write anymore. He wanted to do Crosswords in the pub. Yeah, he wanted to do Crosswords in the pub over a glass of wine.
But
you know?
Morse lives on through Lewis and...
through a substitute, but he gave Morse an ending. You know, Morse dies in a hospital bed. He closed off his character. Mm-hmm. Very few writers get a chance to do that.
Well, I hope it doesn't happen just yet. The current book is really enjoyable, I have
Thank
to say.
You.
And I'm enjoying... as well as the plot, I'm enjoying the writing.
Which, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. Thank you very much.
There's so much going on. So it's so elegant. So, John, thank you very much for joining us. And I better tell people the detail of the book, The Instruments of Darkness, it is called. And the plot line given away on the cover is a child missing, a mother accused. Charlie Parker is their only hope, as is always the case in your book. It's published by Hodder and Stoughton. By the way, you've sold millions and millions of copies in the English language, never mind all the translations.
I've done okay. I haven't been found out yet, like yourself.
Long may that continue.
Indeed, yeah.
John Connolly, thank you very much for joining us. Just back from Liffey Valley with the new book, says this texter. I've been a fan since the very first one.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.